Blue Cavalry, welcome to the Divided Kingdom. Well, another week has gone by. Some of you might have tried to get us Thursday night. I couldn't pick up the shortwave. Don't know whether that was the atmospherics or whether there was a little breakdown. But hopefully, this coming week, it'll be on just fine. And you can hear us on the shortwave at 4.840 megahertz, 4.840 Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can hear us Saturday morning, the repeat of the show at 7490 megahertz at 8 a.m. on Saturdays. And, of course, you can also hear us on Global Star Radio Network and KStarTalkRadio.com and KingdomStarRadio.com, as well as WWCR's own internet, WWCR.com. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's transmitted 3. Again, Thursdays at 8 p.m., but I'm sure it will say. Well, we'll lead off tonight with an article that affects a lot of parents in New Hampshire. This is from LifeSite News, Friday, June 13th, 2025. New Hampshire becomes the latest state to protect parental rights in education. Governor Kelly Ayotte signed a new law that makes New Hampshire the latest state to adopt a parental bill of rights in public education that ensures access to information. And this has been a problem in much of the country, as many of you well know. So let's see what New Hampshire is doing. Concord, New Hampshire. New Hampshire Republican Governor Kelly Ayotte signed a new law to become the latest state to adopt a parental bill of rights in public education that, among other things, ensures parents' access to information related to their children's welfare. Signed into law on June 10th, taking effect July 1st, HB 10 expressly affirms parents' rights, quote, without obstruction or interference from any school to direct the upbringing and the moral or religious training, unquote. Choose public, private, religious, or homeschool. Promptly receive accurate, truthful, and complete disclosure regarding any and all matters related to their minor child. Inspect any instructional material. Opt out of sex education or any other objectionable material or non-academic survey or questionnaire. And review all their children's academic and medical records, and exempt their minor child from immunizations if, in the opinion of a physician, the immunization is detrimental to the child's health or because of religious beliefs. And there were more items. Those were the keys. The law requires every school to establish a parental involvement policy, including procedures for parents to review study materials and their sources, and information about school clubs and activities. And it also requires parents to lodge objections with materials, including based on beliefs regarding morality, sex, and religion, or the belief that any such materials are harmful, and the ability to withdraw children from any portion of the school district's health education program that relates to sex education, or instruction in acquired immune deficiency syndrome education, or any instruction regarding sexuality if the parent provides a written objection to his or to her minor child's participation. And going on with a quote, any parent claiming a violation of any provision of this chapter may bring an action for a declaratory or injunctive relief, or both, and monetary damages against the school. The law says, and it goes on, if a parent prevails in any such court action, the court shall award to the parent his or her reasonable attorney's fees and court costs, including any such attorney's fees and court costs incurred in an appeal to the Supreme Court. He goes on, no one loves a child more than a parent. But now I take that back. Those were the words of the law. Now the governor, Ms. Ayotte, says, no one loves a child more than a parent. And making sure that parents have rights and can understand and know what's happening in their classrooms when their children are in school is so, so important, as they are declared. While American Federation of Teachers, New Hampshire President Deb Howes, complained that the law can make students feel uncomfortable. The indoctrination of children with radical sexual ideologies and other left-wing agenda items, has long been a major concern in American public schools, from libraries to athletic and restroom policy to drag events to classroom materials to even socially, quote, transitioning, unquote, troubled children without parental knowledge or consent. Many schools have also displayed hostility to the rights and employment of individual teachers who refuse to go along with such agendas, regardless of their treatment of or rapport with gender-confused students. In recent years, such trends have provoked a backlash with the election of Republicans, such as Glenn Youngkin in Virginia and Ron DeSantis in Florida. According to the Parental Rights Foundation, 18 states currently have laws on the books specifically protecting parental rights, and 32 states have de facto protection via what is called strict scrutiny, judicial or statutory standards for any law with implications for fundamental rights. Well, that's heartening news for parents, and let's hope that that becomes more common throughout the nation. That was in New Hampshire, and again, that was in LifeSite News. It was by Kelvin Freeberger on Friday, June 13, 2025. And now, my late wife, Elizabeth, who many of you remember fondly, cut her subscriptions to a lot of the ladies' magazines that have been in our home for years and years, some of the old classic magazines. Now, I'm naming a few, and I'm not sure that this applies to all of these, but things like Good Housekeeping, Family Circle. Now, some of these, of course, have gone out of business over the years, but I'm not sure which is which, not being someone who really pays too much attention to the ladies' magazines. But one of the reasons she was becoming more and more disenchanted was the content. A lot of it, as we grew older, really didn't apply to us at all. Things about pregnancy, child-rearing, and there was nothing wrong with that. It's just that it wasn't anything of interest. But one major objection was the seemingly widespread propagation, I guess might be a good word, of pharmaceutical ads, page after page after page of fine print, giving all the benefits, all the drawbacks, all the side effects of a multitude of drugs. And she just got so fed up with it, she canceled the subscriptions of a number of magazines or failed to renew them. So here's a little bit of something on the national scene pertaining to that very thing, except how it applies to television ads. And if you've watched anything on TV, you've probably seen numerous ads. That was another thing that Elizabeth grew so irritated by, was things, or these nice movies that they had on that were family-oriented. They would have all kinds of ads, perhaps because they thought older Americans liked those movies, and therefore they were a good audience to advertise the drugs. Well, here's from The People's Voice, June 13th, 2025, by Sean Adel Tabatabai. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I seem to read it many weeks. And the headline says, RFK to enforce nationwide ban on big pharma TV ads. The subheadline, RFK has announced plans to enforce a nationwide ban on big pharma's television advertisements, targeting the industry's direct-to-consumer drug promotions across multiple platforms. Now, this makes for strange bedfellows. I'll read on. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Angus King of Maine, both independents, are introducing legislation to prohibit pharmaceutical companies from advertising prescription drugs on television, radio, print, digital platforms, and social media, according to the Wall Street Journal. Infowars.com reports The proposal would mark a sweeping shift in the U.S. advertising landscape, where pharmaceutical companies are among the largest spenders. Prescription drug brands accounted for roughly 13% of all ad spending on linear television in 2025, totaling approximately $2.8 billion. Yes, that's with a B, $2.8 billion so far this year. And of course, the year is not quite half done yet. And that's according to iSpot data. In 2024, the industry spent $3.4 billion on traditional TV ads between January and August alone, according to ad tracking data. And Bernie Sanders said in a statement, quote, "The American people don't want to see misleading and deceptive prescription drug ads on television. They want us to take on the greed of the pharmaceutical industry and ban these bogus ads," unquote. The legislation follows longstanding criticism from Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who repeatedly called for a ban on prescription drug advertising. While running for president, Mr. Kennedy said he would issue an executive order, that would be, of course, if he was elected, removing pharmaceutical ads from television, citing over-medication and industry influence on news coverage. Mr. Kennedy said in a video posted to X, quote, "We're one of only two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical companies to advertise directly to consumers. Everybody agrees it's a bad idea," unquote. The United States and New Zealand are currently the only countries that permit direct-to-consumer prescription drug ads, also called DTC ads. Mr. Sanders and Mr. King, who each voted against Mr. Kennedy's confirmation, have long expressed skepticism of consumer drug marketing. In February, Mr. King introduced a bill that would prohibit pharmaceutical advertising in the first 3 years following a drug's approval. Other lawmakers from both parties have taken similar steps. In May, Senators Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, and Jean Shaheen, Democrat of New Hampshire, introduced legislation to eliminate tax deductions for pharmaceutical consumer advertising. Since 1997, when the Food and Drug Administration relaxed disclosure agreements for DTC ads, pharmaceutical companies have increasingly leaned on consumer advertising to drive demand. Under current rules, companies need only disclose a drug's, quote, "most important," unquote, risks during commercials. The result has been a media environment saturated with pharmaceutical messaging. Drug ads make up 24.4% of all advertising minutes on evening news broadcasts across major networks. That's just, and this is Lou speaking now, that's just about a fourth. So one out of every four ads on the network news is for pharmaceuticals. Going on, that includes ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox, Fox News, MSNBC, and NBC through May of this year, according to iSpot. On CBS Evening News, pharmaceutical companies appeared in more than 70% of commercial breaks per Kantar, K-A-N-T-A-R, media. And it gives a website at Zero Hedge, which you can find. It's a little too long to read with about 20 code numbers on it, but you can find it if you go to this article. The industry has defended the practice. The Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, a leading trade group, points to its, quote, "guiding principles," unquote, arguing that direct-to-consumer ads increase disease awareness, encourage patients to seek treatment, and prompt conversations with doctors. Any move to ban pharmaceutical advertising could face legal challenges under the First Amendment's protections for commercial speech. This is Lou again speaking. I don't remember anything about commercial speech in the First Amendment. And I guess that's because it's not there. So I don't know what they're talking about. But clever lawyers have ways of inserting things that are not there when it's their clients that they're talking about. And it concludes, the article concludes, still Mr. Sanders and Mr. King maintain their efforts are necessary to push back against what they describe as an over-commercialized influence on public health messaging. Well, that concludes that article, again, from the People's Voice, June 13th, 2025, entitled RFK to Enforce Nationwide Ban on Big Pharma TV Ads. Well, we'll see if he has any success with that, but there's bound to be a backlash. On almost the same day, we had an article, also from the People's Voice, corporate media begs Congress to not ban drug ads. Quote, we won't survive without pharma money, unquote. Now, notice who's begging. It's not the pharmaceutical companies. It's the corporate media. The old-style corporate media, I call it. Again, this is June 12th, 2025, from the People's Voice, written by Baxter Dimitri. The summary, or the subtitle, reads, Mainstream News Networks are in full panic mode as Congress prepares to vote on a bill that would ban Big Pharma from advertising directly to consumers. Media executives are warning that without pharmaceutical ad revenue, that networks may not survive. Well, we'll see what happens about that, won't we? Again, this is a little interjecting. I would basically approve of this. I don't know all the ins and outs of it, of course. This is not my area of specialty, but on the surface, at least, it seems like these ads have taken over. And you wonder, how much influence did these companies have on things like the COVID shots? After all, the big pharmaceutical companies made billions of dollars during the COVID epidemic or pandemic. And how much of that influenced the news media, who were completely behind the shots? I don't think on the major networks you would ever have heard any of the kind of objections to the vaccines that you heard on the other media. Well, let's see what they have to say here. Reading now, the Wall Street Journal reports that Senators Bernie Sanders and Angus King introduced a bill Thursday to ban pharmaceutical manufacturers from using direct-to-consumer advertising. And I won't read all that because that repeats to some extent what we've already summarized in the first article. And Sanders said in a statement, and I think we already read this, but it's worth reading again, the American people don't want to see misleading and deceptive prescription drug ads on television. They want us to take on the greed of the pharmaceutical industry and ban these bogus ads, unquote. All right, now let me jump down a little bit. Some of this repeats what we already heard a few minutes ago in the other article. All right, let's see what we have here. Again, in 1997, the FDA relaxed its policies. You have to wonder how much influence was there by the big companies that led to that. I doubt that it did the average American any good to relax those policies. And I'll pick up with the article here. That relaxation of the policies in 1997 allowed pharmaceutical companies to make health claims in TV commercials while disclosing only a drug's most important risks. They previously had to disclose much more extensive lists of possible side effects, or else avoid identifying the purpose of the drug in the first place. And as industry observers have been skeptical that the Trump administration could successfully evict pharmaceutical advertising from TV, predicting that any such effort would wind up challenged in court on First Amendment grounds. Pharmaceutical Research and Manufacturers of America, a trade group, has previously responded to questions about Kennedy's proposed ban by pointing to its, quote, guiding principles, unquote, for direct-to-consumer advertising. And we already saw that they said it served public health by increasing awareness about diseases, et cetera. And it says drug makers, meanwhile, often rely on consumer advertising to attract consumers with a narrative around a treatment and the types of people it can help. And a ban on consumer drug ads would also lay down an additional speed bump for an advertising industry already nervous about the effects of President Trump's tariffs. Prescription drug advertising makes up a major portion of the hundreds of billions of dollars spent on advertising in the U.S. each year. Among the largest spenders, AbbVie, that is A-B-B-V-I-E, spent about $377 million to promote the anti-inflammatory drug Skyrizi, S-K-Y-R-I-Z-I, with traditional TV ads last year in the U.S. Novo Nordisk spent about $263 million promoting its weight loss treatment, Wegovy, according to TV ad tracking firm iSpot. Prescription drugs brands accounted for 24.4% of ad minutes, and we saw that before on these major networks, ABC, CBS, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, and NBC, this year through May. So just about one-fourth of the advertisements in terms of the amount of money. Well, we'll see what happens. Pretty hard to fight some of these big companies. We did our little part, Elizabeth and I, while she was still alive, writing our little book. We got a request for one this week, and I'm going to get that in the mail tomorrow. If you'd like a copy of that book, it's free, and it's called COVID and Coming Chaos. You can see our pictures on the back cover, and it's kind of a summary of the facts concerning the COVID epidemic, or pandemic as it's called, and some of the lies and deception that were told about that during, particularly during the first two or three years, 2021, 2022 in particular. And it has a wealth of facts, something you can hang on to as a reference book. So if you'd like to get a copy of that, just write to me, Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, and our address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip is 21609. And I'll make sure I repeat that later in the program if you didn't have a pen or pencil handy. So again, that was from the People's Voice. This time, it was June 12th, just a few days ago, 2025. Corporate media begs Congress to not ban drug ads. We won't survive without pharmaceutical money. Well, they might not do too well. I think they'll survive, but they might be hurting. All right, on a whole different topic, from Slay News, we have this. And of course, as I say this very thing, we are still having some riots in some of the major cities. This one from Slay News says, Federal Appeals Court overrules activist judge, backs Trump keeping the National Guard on L.A. streets. This is June 13th by Frank Bergman. A federal appeals court has overruled a Democrat activist judge's order directing President Donald Trump to turn over control of the National Guard to California. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals issued the ruling on Thursday night. The move allows Trump to keep the National Guard in Los Angeles at least through next Tuesday, which by the time you hear this program, that would be a couple days back. The appeals court scheduled a hearing for Tuesday to consider the issue. Trump deployed the National Guard to quell the violence as local officials failed to contain the rioting. Judge Charles B. Breyer, B-R-E-Y-E-R, a Clemson appointee, found Trump's decision to send in the National Guard amid riots in Los Angeles was illegal. As a result, the judge blocked the president from keeping the troops in the city. Breyer passed his order from taking effect, or paused his order from taking effect until Friday at noon. So this would be the past Friday, as you hear this program. The judge wrote, quote, at this early stage of the proceedings, the court must determine whether the president followed the congressionally mandated procedure for his actions. He did not. His actions were illegal, both exceeding the scope of a statutory authority and violating the 10th Amendment to the United States Constitution. He must therefore return control of the California National Guard to the governor of the state of California forthwith, unquote. In response to the activist judge's ruling, Democrat Governor Gavin Newsom gloated in a post on X, "This win is not just for California, but the nation. It's a check on a man whose authoritarian tendencies are increasing by the day," unquote. The Trump administration immediately appealed the ruling to the Ninth Circuit Court. The appeals court swiftly sided with Trump, overruling Judge Breyer and Democratic officials in California. On Saturday, Trump issued a memo calling 2,000 National Guard members into federal service to, quote, temporarily protect ICE and other United States government personnel, unquote. The move came as violent riots broke out in Los Angeles. Newsom responded Monday by suing Trump, claiming his actions were unconstitutional. In the following Thursday, the Trump administration called Newsom's lawsuit a, quote, crass political stunt endangering American lives, unquote. And we have a quote here. There is no rioters veto to enforcement of federal law, the filing states. And goes on to say, and the president has every right under the Constitution and by statute to call forth the National Guard and Marines to quell lawless violence directed against enforcement of federal law. Once again, that was from Slate News, slatenews.com. Federal appeals court overrules activist judge, etc. That was June 13th, 2025. And now on that subject of riots, and I'm bringing you a lot of up-to-date news because by the time you hear this program, the news probably won't be up-to-date. Things are happening so fast and changing day by day. And that's also true of the international scene. There's not much point to my giving you a lot of news about that because it changes minute by minute. So although I may refer to some of the headlines, I'm not going to try to give kind of an in-depth coverage of all the news that's going on because it's just happening so fast, changing minute by minute. Now, from the People's Voice again, Trump to begin mass deportations of, quote, Soros-funded rioters, unquote. This one is back to Sean Adel-Tabatabai, June 14th, 2025. And the summary says President Trump has vowed to launch mass deportations targeting Soros-funded rioters, focusing on non-citizens involved in violent acts during riots, aligning with a new Republican-led legislative push. Representative Dan Crenshaw, Republican of Texas, is leading a House bill that would empower the federal government to deport non-U.S. citizens, including legal permanent residents, undocumented immigrants, and DACA recipients, if they're convicted of assault and battery or attempted use of force against law enforcement during national emergencies or disasters. Naturalnews.com reports, quote, the thing about breaking the law is there's effectively a waiving of your constitutional rights that's sort of inherent in our system, right? When you go to prison, you're losing your liberty, Crenshaw said in an interview. I believe this is all part of that same quote. Everything after I said Natural News. Crenshaw said that in an interview with Fox News Digital on Tuesday, June 10th. He went on, so this is a very normal thing, and in the case of, say, people who are here legally, but then committing acts of violence, in this case, we're being really specific. During a national emergency, committing assault against police officers and destruction of property, that should have an effect and be on the list of things that allows for revocation of your status, unquote. According to early text of the bill, the measure would take effect in cases where a president, governor, or local leader declares an emergency or major disaster to help federal authorities restore order during such periods, particularly when violent protests or riots involve non-citizens. Now back to a quote. What it would do is it would give the administration the option to say, yeah, We've rounded up all these people. Half of them are U.S. citizens. Okay, they're going to jail for rioting. Maybe another quarter are illegals. Well, that's easy. You can deport them, he said. But what about the other quarter? You know, that might be a number of legal aliens here rioting against America for enforcing our immigration laws. In our minds, you violated that sort of special contract with the United States at that point, unquote. And again, I think all those quotes were from Representative Dan Crenshaw, Republican of Texas. Going on, the bill has not yet been formally introduced, but if enacted, the legislation would make such individuals permanently ineligible to return to the United States. Now, here we have a subheadline: Trump deploys National Guard and U.S. Marines in Los Angeles amid escalating riots. Well, most of you no doubt heard about this, but I'll read a bit of it. This initiative comes as unrest intensifies in Los Angeles, where protests against immigration and customs enforcement, that is, ICE operations, have erupted into violence. Demonstrators have reportedly set fire to American flags and vehicles, leading police to respond with rubber bullets and pepper spray to break up the crowds. As a response to the escalating chaos, President Donald Trump ordered the deployment of 2,000 National Guard and authorized the mobilization of 700 U.S. Marines to the area. Moves that have drawn sharp criticism from California Governor Gavin Newsom. A U.S. defense official confirmed the Marines are currently training in Seal Beach in preparation for further development. And the memorandum reads as follows. In light of these incidents and incredible threats of continued violence, by the authority vested in me as president by the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America, I hereby call to federal service members and units of the National Guard under 10 U.S.C. 12406 to temporarily protect ICE and other United States government personnel who are performing federal functions, including the enforcement of federal law, and to protect federal property at locations where protests against these functions are occurring or are likely to occur, based on current threat assessments and planned operations. Once again, those are the words of the memorandum issued by the president. And again, that was from the People's Voice, June 14th. Trump to begin mass deportations, etc. Now, we'll switch gears a little bit to something a little more historical in nature. This was from JNS.org by Hannon Greenwood, June 7th, 2025. A little bit of archaeological information. Rare discovery at capital of the Kingdom of Israel. Now, here's a little background before I read the article. Some people have asked, where did you get the title of your program, The Divided Kingdom? Well, that goes back to an article that Phoebe Elizabeth's mother sent to her shortly after the 9/11 attacks, way back in 2001, or very early 2002. And it said, as some of you may have remembered from us reading portions of it, of that article that I think appeared in, it might have been the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, one of the Pittsburgh papers. And it said that a Bible had been found at the crash site in Shanksville. And that was of interest because Shanksville is only about, I'd say no more than 20 miles, 25 at the most, from Elizabeth's childhood home in Pennsylvania. And that Bible had survived the crash of the flight that crashed at Shanksville on 9/11. That Bible was basically unhurt, singed a little bit, but basically unhurt. And this was not some rumor, because they named names in the Pittsburgh article that included a priest. I don't have the names in front of me now, but they included a priest, a reporter, and I believe some other people. They saw this Bible that had survived the crash, and it was open to either First Kings or Second Kings, about the dividing of the kingdom after Solomon's reign into two separate kingdoms. The southern one that was named Judah, and the northern one that was named Israel. Israel is the Israel that is described here in this archaeological article. Now, Israel did not survive as long. The Assyrians defeated Israel. I couldn't tell you the century BC, but at some point the Assyrians, from what is now probably Iraq, invaded Israel and deported much of the population. They often speak of the 10 lost tribes of Israel. Well, that's what they're talking about. 10 of the tribes separated and formed this northern kingdom that was known by the name Israel. And that's the 10 tribes that are often spoken of as the 10 lost tribes. There's been all kinds of theories about the American Indians coming from those 10 lost tribes. There have been many, many theories down through the centuries. The two southern tribes survived another century or so, but they too were sacked and deported. Jerusalem was destroyed, the temple was destroyed, and this time it was the Babylonians, the Neo-Babylonian or Chaldean Empire. So now we're talking here in this article about the northern kingdom called Israel, and the title says, Rare Discovery at Capital of the Kingdom of Israel. After nearly a century of archaeological silence, the ancient stones of Sebastia are speaking again as Israeli excavators uncover remarkable finds. This was June 7th, 2025. After nearly a century of archaeological silence, the ancient stones of Sebastia, once known as the city of Shomron, S-H-O-M-R-O-N, or Samaria in English, are speaking again as Israeli excavators uncover remarkable evidence of the grandeur that defined the biblical capital of the Kingdom of Israel. The excavation launched 2 weeks ago has already yielded extraordinary discoveries, including an elegant stone pavement that formed part of a ceremonial street leading from the city's heart to its main gate. Decorated columns that flanked this ancient thoroughfare now lie beside the pathway, a testament to the architectural sophistication of the Herodian period, roughly 37 BCE to 73 CE. And again, that gets my hackles up when I hear that. This is Lou again speaking. It wasn't good enough to just call it BC and AD, because that has the word Christ in them. BC was before Christ. AD was Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord. So some of these sectarian historians decided they would call it, instead of BC, they call it BCE, before the Common Era. And CE, Common Era, would take the place of AD. So when you see those, that's a little rebellion, at least in my estimation, against the God of the Bible. Well, reading on now, among the most intriguing finds is an ornate stone base that archaeologists believe supported a significant monument near the city gate. Though the monument itself has vanished through the millennia, researchers suspect it may have been a decorative gateway marking the entrance to a tower or temple complex. These excavations represent the first comprehensive archaeological work at Sebastia in approximately 100 years following Harvard University's pioneering expedition that initially uncovered the gate and its protective tower around 115 years ago. Since then, the site has suffered from neglect, with debris accumulating around these ancient structures. Shomron was the capital of the Kingdom of Israel during the 9th and 8th centuries BCE. And it shows some pictures. The current project emerged after repeated acts of vandalism at a historically significant location. They prompted government officials to allocate 30 million shekels, about $8.6 million, toward developing Sebastia into a major tourist destination, following the successful model Herodium, also called Herodium National Park in Eastern Gush Etzion. I presume that's in Israel. I don't know my geography that well. But there's a lot of other good things in this article. You might want to look into it. It's at JNS, Soviet capital of the Kingdom of Israel. Well, now we will switch back to some of the things that are happening in this country. Let's see. Well, some of the international news has eclipsed some of the talk about Joe Biden's capacity or lack of capacity in his last years as president, and also what his underlings and even his wife did to prop him up, and how much the decisions were theirs and not his. So here's an article that appeared. I'll read a portion of it. This appeared in the Boston Herald, one of our intrepid contacts in Massachusetts, who gives me some excellent articles every week or two from both New York and Boston papers, has sent this among several other good ones. There simply isn't time to read them all, but I thought this one was especially revealing. We talked a little bit about this, I think, a week or two ago, and it's entitled, His Better Half. The country should know how much Jill Biden covered for a diminished Joe. And this is by Peter Lucas, once again, the Boston Herald, May 27th, 2025. Former First Lady Jill Biden may not have been running the country, but she was running Joe Biden, which amounts to the same thing. And when all the dust is settled over the cover-up about Joe Biden's declining mental capacity as president, if it ever is, it may turn out that Jill Biden was the real power behind the throne, or the real president, calling the shots behind the scenes of her obviously incapacitated husband, as well as covering up for him. Jill Biden could go down as the modern Edith Wilson of America. Edith Wilson was the second wife of President Woodrow Wilson. She ran the country for almost 2 years when Wilson was incapacitated following a stroke in 1919. The stroke was of such intensity that a bedridden Wilson was paralyzed on the left side of his body and blind in one eye. Edith Wilson's first move after Wilson's debilitating stroke was to mislead the nation regarding its seriousness, much the way Jill Biden talked about Joe Biden's alleged vigor. This came as Biden was falling down, falling asleep in meetings, his mind wandering, confused, forgetful, stumbling around and slurring his words. Edith Wilson, who in effect became the first woman acting president, hovered over Woodrow in the way Jill Biden, the second woman acting president, hovered over Joe. Thanks to his loyal wife, no one outside the White House, including the press, knew what a basket case Wilson was. Or if the press knew, they remained silent about it, the way today's legacy media, except Fox News and the Wall Street Journal, remained silent about Joe Biden's mental acuity until he left the White House. Yet it was still obvious that at times, as time went by, Joe Biden could hardly talk or walk without Jill Biden at his side. When he did talk, she ended up finishing his thoughts as he trailed off into space, as she did when the pair recently appeared on ABC's The View. Edith Wilson guided her husband the way Jill Biden guided Joe, only more so. Even Wilson's vice president, the genial Thomas P. Marshall, as well as cabinet members and congressional leaders, were prohibited from meeting with the veteran Wilson. If they needed decisions on policy matters, they would present them to Edith Wilson, and she would then allegedly confer with a certain president and return with a decision. Whether the decisions were President Wilson's or hers remained an open question. In a column we wrote last July, we quoted Edith Wilson, who died in 1961 at age 89, on the matter of her decision-making role as, quote-unquote, acting president. She said, quote, "The only decision that was mine was what was important and what was not important, and the very important decision of when to present the matter to my husband," unquote. In other words, to get to the president was not through his chief of staff, vice president, House Speaker, or Senate president, but through her. Joe Biden, throughout his 4 years as president, nowhere in such bad shape as Wilson was. Yet, the cover-up of Biden's mental acuity and physical feebleness is remarkably comparable, even given the pass Biden got from the progressive media today. With the collusion of the progressive media and corrupt left-wing media, Jill Biden and a few White House operatives were able to construct a palace guard around Joe Biden that kept him hidden from the public and accessible to only a few still unnamed trusted aides. The question remains whether Congress will seek to hold hearings to determine who decided what during Biden's presidency. Did a mentally challenged Joe Biden decide to open the borders and flood the country with illegal criminal immigrants, for instance, or withdraw from Afghanistan in humiliating fashion, or hide his prostate cancer diagnosis from the public? Or was it someone else who made those decisions? The country needs to know. And once again, that was from the Boston Herald, Boston, Massachusetts, May 27, 2025, by Peter Lucas. And the title of the article was His Better Half. And now we'll have some short headlines. We had one here. Federal court, flu vaccines cause Guillain-Barré syndrome. We've heard that before, but this is a little more official now. This is on Slate News, and the date was May 28th, 2025. In a landmark ruling, a U.S. federal court has declared that influenza vaccines caused Guillain-Barré syndrome. And that, by the way, is an unusual spelling. I don't know if it's French, but it's Guillain-Barré. And that's an incurable and life-threatening neurological disorder. The ruling was issued by the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. The court sided with Alan Lien, L-I-E-N, of Wisconsin, who had suffered life-changing injuries caused by a flu shot. Lien was awarded $500,000 in damages for his vaccine-induced injury. This marks a significant ruling under the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, VICP. The judgment follows Lien's diagnosis with that syndrome. And the court determined that Lien's GBS, that is Guillain-Barré syndrome, was caused by a flu shot received in October 2019. That from Slate News on May 24th. Now, a little different topic. This is from Slate News. New eye-scanning digital ID launches in six American cities. And I have mixed feelings about this. If you have strong feelings one way or the other, write to me. Once again, my address is Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. This is by David Linfield, again, on SlateNews.com. New eye scanning digital ID launches in six American cities. The date was May 29th, 2025. A new biometric digital ID program has quietly taken root in six major U.S. cities, raising alarm bells among Americans concerned with personal liberty and digital surveillance. Under the banner of, quote, fighting AI fraud, unquote, the World ID Project, backed by OpenAI's Sam Altman, is scanning people's irises in exchange for cryptocurrency and possibly their privacy. The system uses a device called the Orb, O-R-B, a shiny spherical scanner that captures the unique patterns of your eye. The goal? To create a digital ID that proves you're a real human being online. The project's developers claim this technology will help protect against bots and fraud. And this is only part of a larger article, but those are the headlines. Again, that was new eye-scanning digital ID. And May 29th, Slate News. All right, what else do we have here? Well, we have here, oh, Walmart. I was shopping at Walmart a few days back. And this is from dailymail.co.uk. Walmart price hikes exposed as staff leaks photos showing shocking increases. This is by Ben Shimkus. And let's see what the date was. May 28th, 2025. And I'll just read a couple of the sentences here. Walmart employees say prices are quietly surging on everyday essentials. And they're posting pictures as they swap out price tags. In a string of posts across Reddit, self-identified staffers say they've seen prices jump as much as 80% on popular items. One photo shows Hasbro's My Real Baby dolls price surged from $34.97 to $49.97, a nearly 43% increase. Another reported that an 8-ounce canister of Great Value cocoa nearly doubled in price from $3.44 to $6.18. Walmart hasn't responded to DailyMail.com's request for comment. All right, well, if you shop at Walmart, you might take note of that. And again, this is from DailyMail.co.uk, May 28th, 2025. All right. Here's a shocking one. Scientists warn city-killing asteroids could be headed for Earth within weeks after revealing fatal detection flaw. This was from dailymail.co.uk, May 29th, 2025, by Chris Malore, M-A-L-O-R-E, Assistant Science Editor for dailymail.com. At least three city-killing asteroids that could strike Earth are hiding behind our closest neighbor in the solar system. A new study warns that Venus is blocking out our view of many near-Earth asteroids, large space rocks that cross or come near Earth's orbit, setting up the potential for a devastating impact. Researchers from Brazil, France, and Italy found that several asteroids in sync with Venus's orbit are extremely hard to spot because they are often hidden by the sun's glare. And Brother Bruce of, I believe it's American Prophecy, sent us some of these articles, and he has this comment. In Revelation chapter 8, I believe it's verse 8, and the second angel sounded, and a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And I can't quite read the fraction there, but a certain part of the ships were destroyed. You want to look that up in the Bible? I believe it's Revelation 8, verse 8. Again, that came from dailymail.co.uk on May 29th, if you'd like to get a more detailed copy of it. And now we have from slaynews.com. June 2nd, Bill Gates' COVID replicon mRNA vaccines caused severe blood abnormalities in 93% of recipients. This was by Frank Bergman. The article is actually dated May 31st of 2025. I guess it was obtained from the internet on June 2nd. Shocking new clinical trial data has revealed that the new Bill Gates-funded self-amplifying, quote, replicon, unquote, COVID mRNA vaccines caused severe blood abnormalities in almost all recipients. As Slate News has previously reported, the ARCT-154 vaccine is marketed as Kostaive, I believe, K-O-S-T-A-I-V-E. Kostaive is a self-replicating mRNA, SARMA, injection developed by Arcturus Therapeutics, a Bill Gates-funded company specializing in mRNA-based pharmaceuticals. One of Arcturus Therapeutics' senior advisors, former CDC and FDA official, Dr. Peter A. Patriarca also advises for the Gates Foundation. The self-amplifying or replicon mRNA shots contain the equipment needed to make more of itself once it enters the cells. That was from Slate News on May 31st. All right, here we have something from May 21st. Lightside News, RFK calls out World Health Organization directly as a compromised body beholden to China. And this is by Emily Angiaracina, Wednesday, May 21st. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. slammed the World Health Organization, WHO, as a compromised institution that has capitulated to Chinese political interests in a Tuesday video address to the WHO's governing body. Months after President Donald Trump's withdrawal of the United States from the WHO, the U.S. Health and Human Services, HHS Secretary, called out the WHO for its control by China, its mismanagement of the COVID outbreak, and its lack of transparency. And Kennedy said on Tuesday, quote, like many legacy institutions, the WHO has become mired in bureaucratic bloat, entrenched paradigms, conflicts of interest, and international power politics. While the United States has provided the lion's share of the organization's funding historically, other countries such as China have exerted undue influence over its operations in ways that serve their own interests and not especially the interests of the global public. This became obvious to Kennedy during the COVID outbreak when the WHO suppressed reports of human transmission of COVID-19 under pressure from China and helped promote the fiction that the virus came from bats and not from Chinese government-sponsored work, the biolab in Wuhan. That from Lightside News, Wednesday, May 21st, 2025. Well, I see our time is just about up. Write to me. We would love to get your letters, and any donations will be much appreciated. The address, Blue Cavalry, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next week.